From the Paley Center for Media in New York, this is Max Media. Here's Max Robbins.
Hello, everybody. Max Robbins here. Today, it is my true honor, my pleasure, to have as my guest, Richard Liebner. Richard heads up NS Beanstalk. This, for those of you outside the business, I'm sure everybody inside the business knows exactly what Richard does. This is the most successful, powerful talent agency in the business of news and talk talent in the business. I mean, really unprecedented. Over 600 clients, many of them household names, and that would include Dan Rather, that would include Bill O'Reilly, Anderson Cooper, and I'm just scratching the surface here. At any rate, Richard, who I've known for a long, long time and who has incredible insight about the business, how it works and sometimes doesn't work, is kind enough to be here with us, and we're actually going to get to the heart of what he actually does for a living. What's a typical day like, Richard?
Well, usual day will start with putting on 2 or 3 of the morning shows on a couple of television sets.
What time does that start?
At home. Well, it used to start at 5. Now it starts more like at 6:30 or 7.
Oh, you're cutting back.
I'm cutting back.
And you're in bed with who watching that?
Carol Cooper.
Who's your wife and partner.
Who is my wife
ways.
And partner in every way, and who does represent Anderson Cooper and does represent Bill O'Reilly. For 37 years, she's represented Bill,
I know,
among
she's,
others.
She's amazing. I want to talk about that later. But I remember from day one when nobody knew who Bill O'Reilly was. And, you know, back in my days at Variety, every time I'd see her, when are you going to write about Bill? When are you going to do something about Bill? He's going to be great. He's going to blow up, you know?
Carol's quite extraordinary and quite good at what she does. She started out in the advertising industry, and if we hadn't started a family, I'm convinced she would have been the head of a major advertising agency.
Wow.
She goes back to Mad Men days.
Do you keep some of those traditions alive at Beanstalk?
I remember one Christmas Eve, right after we got married, I'm on the phone calling her that she's at an office Christmas party when all of a sudden, she screams, "Get your hands off of me," and her boss has reached around and grabbed her by her privates. So Mad Men is true.
Did she head over there with a gun?
No, she can take care of herself.
But so the day starts early. You have what? How many TV sets in the bedroom?
2 that split to 4 screens.
Wow, so you've got literally, talk about multitasking. I mean, you're watching 7, 8 broadcasts all at once?
You switch around and you go up and down because we have people on GMA. We have people on all the shows, and John Roberts is our client on the CNN morning show also. So you try and rotate and watch a little of everybody.
Then about what time are you getting into the office? Is there 50 calls on the call sheet? What goes on?
No, let's be realistic. The business is quieter right now because of the economic conditions that the country is looking at. And the broadcast business is one of the hardest hit because of the great reduction in advertising dollars. And with staffs being cut back some and with movement less likely between stations, it's a little quieter at work than normal, but a 50-call day is not unusual, and people's anxiety levels are up, and there are always people calling for help and organizations calling for help in difficult times. I got a letter from your membership chairman today who just started saying, "I've just checked 20 years of records. I should know you better."
So in the agent business, big egos, a lot of hand-holding goes on, and this is even more so. I mean, this is your really pronounced...
Yeah, but, this big ego thing, the broadcast business, whether it's radio or television, news, talk, and the other things, is a pyramid-shaped business. And the only people who really, are put under so much public pressure that sometimes people point at them and talk about ego are the ones at the very top making the big salary. But this is a an industry that's made up of a very broad base of hard working people who've made journalism and broadcasting and entertainment a calling. And so when people talk about ego in the movie sense of the word in the news and the information industry, I think that's terribly overstressed. These are real people working at tough jobs, making fair livings, and the great majority of the people would be just as successful as lawyers or writers or ad people. And so I don't like when people use the word ego too often about the people in the business.
Well, but let me ask you this, though. Aren't you, though, the job of an agent, you're really there in some ways as a counselor, to guide, to advise? I mean, there's a reason people pay you in a percentage of what they make.
I say I do two things for a living, four words. Lay shrink, verbal plumber.
And has the kind of the tone and the nature of that conversation, given that these are such challenging times in the business, has that changed when you get a call from somebody and they say, Richard, I'm really unhappy here, I don't like how they're treating me or whatever? And
well, but right now you've got to keep people steady because the flow and the movement between organizations has slowed down tremendously. And what you've got to make people understand is there's a tendency when people are frightened about their job or about decreased ratings or about lower huts with less people listening and watching in different places. You've just got to tell people, don't personalize it and be steady and do your best work and stay away from the water cooler politics so you're not perceived as a naysayer or a problem maker in an organization, and things will work itself out. I've been doing this long enough to remember when Nixon put in a price wage freeze, and what was it like being an agent when there was a law against getting a raise of more than a percentage or 2 points, and the 80s weren't fun, and part of the 90s weren't fun. All things happen, but we're going through a much more permanent change with the onset of the different delivery systems. And although nobody's figured out how to monetize the internet in a significant way yet, so many people are getting information from so many different places that there is kind of a shaking out and there is a leveling off of the places that people can get their information, and therefore what we once called broadcasting, which became narrowcasting with some cable and cable news channels, and now you have so many regional cable channels, news cable channels like New York 1 and Westchester 12 and Long Island 12. And by the way, there's a reason for those channels. They have the ability to give exposure to politicians in a somewhat quasi-monopoly situation so that they can give face time that the bigger broadcasters never could give. That's how they came into existence.
So it seems, though, is some of the traditional markets where you were placing talent shrink, you're seeing new opportunities.
There's more news and information on the air than there's ever been. And there are probably more people, even with cutbacks, working at jobs. The more difficult part of the situation is the separation of the stars from the basic talent and the number of people who can grow in the middle and make much better salaries. There's always a tendency in difficult times to cut out the middle.
I would think, though, that the real brand names, some of the people I mentioned at the top of the show, Bill O'Reilly and Anderson Cooper, recently a client of yours, Glenn Beck, moved over to Fox News.
Yeah, George Hiltzik in our office has been taking care of Glenn.
And his ratings have gone through the roof. Are those talents in this kind of diffuse, multi-platform universe that we're operating in, have those brand names, if you will, have they become even more valuable than ever?
A tentpole talent, a talent who can lead in to hours of programming and hold up ratings. Fox is for Glenn Beck to go into the 5 o'clock hour and to become the third highest rated person in broadcast television is extraordinary in cable, and that's helped the 6 and the 7, and O'Reilly's numbers have never been bigger at 8, and Hannity operating alone, his numbers are immense. So it's made it tougher, and it also instigated to a great degree how MSNBC has moved towards labeling itself from keeping its identity of an NBC News down the middle of the road to going to the left after Ailes, Roger, the best marketer in the business, has so successfully found a voice for the right and the blue-collar worker and the people who felt that the liberals had too much of a voice and that nobody was ever hearing the other side of the story.
I want to talk some more about that, but I want to remind everybody you're listening to Max Media. My guest today, Richard Liebner, who an agent in the news talent business without peer. We're talking about some very distinctive news personalities, and I don't mean personalities in any sense of the word pejorative, but people who cut through. What I want to ask you is, how do you decide to represent somebody? How do you decide that's going to be the next Rather, that's going to be the next O'Reilly? How do you know?
It's funny. It's usually a very, other than know-how and experience, if you've watched as many tapes or as many hundreds or thousands of hours as news as I've watched, or as Peter Goldberg and Rick Ramage and George and Steve Satacario, and Carol, all of our key agents came from broadcasting. Three of our top agents were vice presidents of business affairs with relationships and working and vetting magazine stories. So you begin to hear good writing. You also begin to hear cleverness and people who are students of what they do, and you kind of form personal relationships. I was in my middle 20s when Eric Severide sat me down at 2020 M Street and
CBS News
had the great bureau of all time. And Severide said to me, keep your eye on this young kid from Texas. He's got the smallest education, but he's the hungriest person. He's come to me for a reading list, and he reads books and then comes to me and talks about books. Carol's represented Bill 36 years and always...
That person Severide was talking about was...
Dan Rather.
Of course.
And Carol always sensed a kind of strong-willed maverickness in O'Reilly, and always had a sense that he was going to be successful. The late Roger King never forgave himself for having let him go from Inside Edition
just
and trying not to syndicate,
right. Roger
trying
King,
not
who ran
to
King World.
Syndicate a show, and he was the greatest syndicated salesman who ever lived. And Roger sensed that O'Reilly would be right for this new channel, and then Bill sensed the blue collar aspect of it. And when Roger moved,
Roger Ailes.
When Roger Ailes moved O'Reilly from the 7 o'clock time slot to the 8 o'clock time slot, when people had finished dinner, when his people were home, when the working class guy finally kicked back and could listen, is when O'Reilly took off like a shot with the help from Monica's blue dress, and that network flew like a helium-filled balloon from that point on.
But
so it's you sense it. It's a good agent. Good agent. Yes, it's in your fingertips. It's in your gut, and it's in how you connect personally with the person you represent. Because you've got to have some strong feelings for them. If you just take on everybody under the sun, then you don't really have time for the good ones.
With that in mind, I'm wondering if there's been a time where you and Carol, you've got those 8 windows up on your bedroom, on all the TV screens, and you see somebody and they just cut through, and it's maybe somebody new the first time, or all of a sudden they just pop a story they do. Is there been a time like that you can remember where you say, whoa, let's track him down, let's track her down. This is somebody we want.
We've done that through the years. You know, you see somebody and you go after them, or your reputation and your knowledge has people send them to you. Diane Sawyer, who was a client for years, you only had to see her tape to know that she was going to go the distance.
I mean, when you started representing her, she was like a second-string correspondent at the State Department.
She was the backup State Department and Pentagon correspondent.
At CBS?
Coming back from being in exile with Nixon, helping him write the book. But one of the ones, Peter Goldberg always had a terrific relationship with Robin Roberts, and together, the two of us, it just clicked with us that Robin could be a morning television personality.
The co-anchor.
And we believed in that, and we worked at that, and that's one of those things that you make happen, just like I always knew that Rather would be Cronkite's replacement.
Right. Because you have such a deep list, such a deep bench of talent that you represent. I mean, over the years, there have been people like Diane Sawyer who've, after some time, left. It's an inevitability of the business. I think that you and I broke bread about a week ago, and you were talking about how, in a way, the business has gotten more predatory, other agents poaching. How do you prevent against it? How do you keep people happy?
It's like anything else. You stay in contact with people. You do the best job you can do. And if that doesn't work, you don't let it make you sick or crazy or nuts. You keep on an even keel.
The thing is that you also are in a situation sometimes, again, where you might have three or four people who are all suited for you. You not only on-air talent, but executive producers of shows, some terrific producers I know you represent. You might be representing the same people for the same job. How do you keep everybody happy, Richard?
In the end, if you have somebody who's strong in an area, you don't take somebody new on in that area unless that person acknowledges who you already represent, so that you're not going to hear from them, well, you can't do it for me because you have Joe. If I've represented Joe when you've come on board, then that's something you should understand. But in the end, management makes decisions. The most important ability that an agent has is to put the strengths of their client forward in the strongest way they can. And in the end, management makes the decisions. And once in a while, you will end up with a situation where you have two people vying for the same job. More often than not, if you've been truthful, to me, the greatest answer to when people say you have a conflict of interest is honesty and integrity. If you point out to one client that you also represent somebody else, or somebody else in the office who's going after that job, and you tell them the truth and you tell them how you're fighting for them, then you win or you lose. And more often than not, the client believes that you've done fairly by them, even if they're not the winner in the particular sweepstake that's been going on.
Thank you. You're listening to Max Media. I'm Max Robbins. I'm here with my guest today, Richard Liebner, who is, I think, without peer among agents representing news talent. He's been at it a day or two, and we're kind of getting to the heart of what he does. I also, though, wanted to talk to you, Richard. I mean, you really do see the landscape. I've had the pleasure of having a running dialogue with you for years about the business of television news. We touch on it a little bit. Where are we today? I mean, where are things going?
Well, what's happened with the new delivery systems is the power of accumulating audiences has gotten more difficult. When Rather took over from Cronkite, I think Dan was doing 26 million.
26 million people watching every night. Whoa.
And even if the other two only added 15 and 10 at that time, you were talking about over 50 million people. Now the three broadcasts together are probably bringing in a little under 30 million people a night.
On a good night, it's probably
combined,
closer to 25.
But yet that's still one of the largest daily audiences on television in the same time slot. So then business is reality, and I think one of the big changes that happened in journalism and in broadcast and in information is you used to have moguls who owned these companies, and they were very socially conscious people. You had Mr. Paley, you had Goldenson, and you had Sarnoff, and so in the early days of television, there was so much profits to be made in the entertainment areas and so little competition that you could build strong, big, powerful news organizations. Now,
the payoff came elsewhere. I mean, that meant access in Washington. It meant you had a broadcast license. It meant in the eyes of politicians, and you were doing good.
Not even in politicians. It meant the dinner parties that you went to on Park Avenue and Fifth Avenue on weeknights. You were the Golden Knight. You were protecting, the ideology and the culture and the fairness of the public. Electronic journalism's golden era, you know, people say it starts with the assassination of Kennedy and the coverage of it. But I really think its golden moment starts before Kennedy is shot, when it starts covering the racial problem and integration in such a thorough way, when you would have Hughes Rudd or a Roger Mudd sitting in some southern city every night while there were affiliates who didn't want to carry the broadcast, and bringing that story forward. And through Johnson and the Great Society and the passing of the voting rights law, space also was something that grew the image terrifically. And you had two people who dominated that in broadcasting, Cronkite, who dominated it in every way, and then Jules Bergman, who was kind of ABC's first star because he was such a space junkie and knew it so well. But now, with the diffuseness and them having to cut back, you depend upon the harder working efforts of fewer people, and you depend upon, I think the public, as there's less reading, as there's more pressure on people in bad economic times, and one of the reasons for the success of cable news channels is some people are looking for opinions and things to provoke them and make them think harder about ideas. Whether they agree or disagree to what they're listening to, there are a lot of people now who want more than the facts because they don't have the time to find it themselves. And you have the news magazines, Newsweek, U.S. News, and Time struggling to find a format to hold audience.
When you come back and visit us a year from now, I'd be surprised if all three of those are still in business.
Well, you pick them up and they bend at the staple, but then you'll get particularly great issues every once in a while. There's a very good piece in Time this week about, is this shakeout going to be good for us? One of the longest pieces they've run in ages. Last week's Newsweek on popularism and Fareed Zakaria's insights into
you represent Fareed,
foreign affairs,
right?
On television, not as a writer. But cream will always come to the top. I think the thing that worries me most is that we hear about earmarks. We know how much corruption's gone on. We know the audacity of the bankers and the bonuses and everything. And the station groups, whether they were big or small ones, would always have one reporter in Washington. We've got nobody watching congressmen now for states like Indiana and Alaska and other places.
There are a lot of major cities.
Exactly.
In San Diego.
And newspapers were the original heart of investigative journalism and could dedicate writers to a story for 4, 5, 6 months and break things. The thing that I think has most people worried in journalism right now is, where is the time going to come to, as the slogan on Anderson's show is, how are we keeping them honest? Is there going to be enough time and talent to keep corruption or stretching the rubber band too far from happening too often.
Where there's such a huge news well to fill, whether it's the 24/7 news cycle of cable, what's happening on the internet and whatnot, could we potentially be entering a new golden age of news? Could technology making a lot of things a little easier to do, if you will, cheaper to do? Is it possible that these news organizations that you deal with on a daily basis could be more proactive than reactive?
The chances for good journalism are always going to be there. There are always going to be people who really care. Where the funding and the time is going to come from. Lately, I've heard a lot of talk about foundations or organizations are going to have to be the ones that fund investigative journalism more often than not, because until this ideology sweeper, unless we have a real societal change in how we look at things, the cable news networks are running more on point of view than they're running on being investigative. You'll get these conflicts every once in a while, but there will be young people, and the internet is a plus and a minus. There's no editing, there's no ethics code, there's no rules about ethics in the internet. So if somebody wants to say something, they can have it. Everybody's suddenly a publisher. But how do you know it's fair or it's reasonable or it's not lies? But I believe that out of the younger generation will come really quality young people who find a way, who will see things wrong in local places and cities and states, establish themselves and tell stories and draw attention to themselves and get the stories out there. There are too many people who care, and this thing will shake out once we turn the corner economically.
And they'll need representation.
Hopefully.
Well, that brings me to this. Before we close, I want to ask you about the future of your company, NS Beanstalk. You are truly, I mean, Richard, it's you and Carol sit atop. You've got a great core agents. Both of your sons work in the business. I mean, this is a family business. You told me earlier, instead of getting up at 5:30 in every morning to watch, you're sleeping in till 6:30.
There are other people who should be getting up earlier. I think they are. Look.
Where goes the business?
The bottom line is one of the things I say to some of the broadcasters is for 100 years, for 50 years, broadcasting was a 40 to 50% margin business. As things change, what's wrong with the stocks as low as they are now as a result of the play in the market and all the debt they've absorbed going into internet? What's wrong with the stocks as low as they are, accepting the reality of being a 10 or a 15 or a 20% business and not taking too much out of the bottom line so that the quality exists? When the tide comes back in, the boat better be able to float. So you can't not have a product. You've got to do something to keep it up. And what I hope is that as tight as things are getting at local stations and at newspapers and everybody else, there's a responsibility. There's a bottom line that'll be drawn. Last week, one of the newspapers that closed was picked up by an investment group because they felt it was important to the community. I think in the end, people understand that our democracy needs a strong press, and it will rally.
And just before we close, quickly, you guys have stayed independent. There's been I remember some years ago, a dalliance with Creative Arts Agency, a major Hollywood agency, but you stayed independent. You staying independent? Can you still go it alone?
It's always been our fondest hope to go it alone. We've gone into new areas. We do reality programming and other things. I can't tell you what the future holds. A good businessman always has an open mind to possible change, but we'd love to stay independent and strong.
Well, I hope you continue to be an independent voice and you come back and see us. This is Max Media. Our guest today has been Richard Liebner, the head of the NS Beanstalk Agency, the number one agency in news talent, and a man with a singular perspective on the news business. Richard, Thank you so much.
My pleasure, Max. My pleasure. And to help out the Paley Center anytime.
Thank you. This has been Max Media. We'll see y'all soon.
You've been listening to Max Media, a production of the Paley Center for Media in New York City. We're on the web at paleycenter.org. That's PaleyCenter.org. And you can reach us by email at maxmedia@paleycenter.org.